You are Locked On Heat, your daily Miami Heat podcast. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Okay, welcome to Locked On Heat, your semi-daily podcast on all things Miami Heat. We'll go back to being a daily show closer to the season. My name is Wes Goldberg, and I'm here with Dave Vermeil. The Heat are focused on Bradley Beal, and Bam is hitting step-back threes in pickup games. But we'll begin today's show by talking about something you wrote for Forbes, David. The idea you had is finding players who can make a Dwight-like return to the Heat. Would you like to explain that?
Yeah, using Dwight as a template. His one season with the Lakers was back in the 12-13 season. So any player who was on a Heat roster starting from that point forward until, obviously today. Obviously, they're no longer in a Heat roster. And my criteria, much like Dwight, was that they had to be an active player and have been on an active roster last year. Otherwise, we could just fill it with Mario Chalmers six times over. So,
Yeah,
but that's not the reality. I wanted to look at different players. And it's not so easy because, as I explained in the piece, a number of the players that were on that roster during the Big Three era in 12-13 have moved on. The Heat's roster building method was unique at that point because of the core of Dwayne Wade, Chris Bosh, and LeBron James, and of course surrounded that core with veterans that were looking to compete for a title, etc. Then they had that 2-year span in between the short-lived rebuild with Dwayne and Chris, but then Chris started getting his injury issues, and of course Goran Dragic was acquired, and they still had some mediocre players, a cast of characters around them, but at the same time either they're still on the roster, or for the most part, a lot of those guys have since retired, or they may not really be eligible for, or in consideration as far as whether or not the Heat would even want to bring him back. So there weren't a whole heck of a lot of options.
Well, did it matter that Dwight's first first time with the Lakers was a disappointment? Were you trying to find that sort of qualification for Heat players, that the first stint or the last stint was somewhat of a disappointment, or that part?
Not necessarily. Okay. It was kind of the barometer that if they welcomed Dwight back when things ended so badly and when it didn't really look like an obvious fit with this current Lakers team, then you can almost make that justification for any player so long as they happen to have been on that roster at some point, again, since the 12-13 season. So I looked at a number of players. Some guys made an honorable mention, mostly Michael Beasley. He fits the criteria.
See, that's the one I wanted to talk about, because you listed a whole bunch of players. Michael Beasley wasn't one of them. I thought you missed out on that. I think Michael Beasley is the guy. That is absolutely the number one guy who can make a Dwight-like return.
I think he burned his bridges. Spoelstra is still the head coach. He does not or did not care publicly for
Eric
Spoelstra.
But did Dwight not burn his bridges?
Well, it's a different staff altogether. Like, think about how the Lakers played out. I mean, Mike D'Antoni was the coach at that point during Dwight's previous stint. It was a whole different front office.
But the fans are still there. The fans did not like Dwight Howard. They've been trashing Dwight Howard for years.
Look, he chose to leave in free agency. I think it's a little different than, we gave Michael three different opportunities. We drafted him. We brought him back not once, but twice.
And the second or third time was the Dwight-like return. Whatever the fourth time is past Dwight-like.
Right.
Michael Beasley.
I can't see them making the exception to say, let's bring him back. To what end? Like, what's he going to do? Contribute some offense and against some mediocre defense?
Get buckets.
He's older. Yeah. I don't think he's that high a priority, or his offense, whatever it might be, is that high a priority that you'd be willing to bring him back a fourth time and go through that experience again.
So who did you come up with then? Let's not step up on the entire article, but just the one that you think is the one.
The most likely to come back?
Whoever you want to talk about.
Care about. You can make a case for all of them. Rodney Magruder was a great example. I think he's a guy who fits the Heat culture perfectly. He signed his 3-year deal with the Clippers this past offseason. At some point, that deal will expire, and who's to say what kind of a player Rodney's going to be like in 3 years? I don't think it's going to be a significantly better version of the player he was in Miami, nor the version that he's going to be in Los Angeles. He's just going to be counted in LA as being a complementary role player, a backup, a guy who's going to contribute some hard-nosed defense, the kinds of things he should have been in Miami, but he had to play a bigger role. You can make another case for Tyler Johnson, a guy who...
I like the Tyler Johnson pick a lot. I think that's the one that makes the most sense.
Yeah, I mean, he's not a bad player. Unfortunately, he's just viewed through the lens of that obscene contract, and you know, that's impossible for people to separate from Tyler Johnson the player to Tyler Johnson the contract. He'd be a great fit. He still has friends here. He still has close ties to the organization. He outworked everybody and built himself up into a solid NBA player. He wasn't drafted, and he's a great success story. Unfortunately, again, that contract overshadows almost anything he's accomplished on the floor.
Yeah, he didn't burn any bridges, obviously, on the way out. If anything, the team was sad to see him go. But it was similar to Dwight Howard, his first stint with the Lakers. There was an expectation set by fans. And given, you know, with Tyler Johnson, the contract does warrant a certain expectation that he didn't live up to, for being fair. He didn't live up to it. It doesn't mean he was wrong to sign the contract. It means maybe the Heat were wrong to give it to him. But Absolutely. That's about it. And just like the Lakers were probably wrong to bring in Dwight Howard and bill him as the next great Laker after Kobe Bryant were to retire, because they were talking about him being the guy after Kobe to lead them into whatever the next edition of the Lakers were, because it was Kobe, it was Steve Nash, and it was Dwight. And Dwight was obviously the youngest out of that group. You know, Kobe was still really great, but on his last leg, Steve Nash was looking just for maybe one more run at a championship there, even though he was still all-star-ish caliber. But there was an expectation there. And he didn't meet that expectation in L.A. Lakers fans were upset with him. Heat fans have long been upset with Tyler Johnson because of the contract and the expectations set with that. So if Tyler were to and just like Dwight, they're about average NBA players at this point, maybe slightly above average, but basically average players. And if Tyler were to come back, it would probably look something similar to Dwight Howard, where he's not going to make nearly as much money as he did the first time he was in Miami.
Yeah, I still think that there were higher expectations placed on Dwight,
and he had already a superstar reputation. Yeah,
and there was trying to play alongside Kobe too. I mean, there were a whole different number of things going on with Dwight's situation
right.
in Los Angeles.
This is the closest thing, I think. I mean, you mentioned Hassan Whiteside, but
I did.
There were no real expectations with, like, nobody thought Whiteside was gonna lead the Heat to a championship, and I'm sorry if you did. I mean, I'm sorry if you did, but like.
But maybe an all-star selection. I mean, I think he could have been primed for that based on his, you know, level of production during the 2 years when he was a great value contract. You might have thought that he could, you know, somehow make the leap into all-star.
He burnt bridges.
He did. Yeah, he did.
For him to come back to Miami, it would have to be a whole new regime like it was in L.A.
Yeah, that's possible. You know, or a really humbling experience. Like, maybe he'd be out of the league again following the end of this contract. I still think that somebody would be willing to get, like, if the Lakers, if he was a free agent and if he was on that same, you know, pool of players as Joakim Noah, Dwight Howard, and Hassan Whiteside,
the Lakers
would they have
up.
Signed? Yeah, I'm sure they would have signed Whiteside. But
I'll tell you what, it will be. I really hope, like, you never know what's going to happen in the NBA, but if 3, 4, 5 years from now, the Heat end up, like, Eric Spoelstra and Pat Riley and Andy Ellsberg and all these guys are gone, and they end up signing Hassan Whiteside for $2.5 million on a non-guaranteed deal.
Yeah.
Things got bad in Miami, and that would be a really bad sign. I really hope that never happens. I could see Tyler Johnson coming back. I could see that.
Wayne Ellington, too. That's another name I listed there, and I think that's actually a pretty likely one. I mean, he still has his home here. Obviously, there was a sense of stability that he never achieved anywhere else. So to me, look, I mean, the Knicks have a 2-year deal with him, but that second year is a team option. He could wind up being a free agent as soon as next season. And with some of those contracts coming off the books for Miami, I could see them opening up a spot for a great shooter like Wayne.
Yeah, they didn't want to see him go. But they, you know, you have to do what you have to do.
Yeah.
Let's take a break. Coming up next, Bam's hitting step back threes and pickup games. Can you do that in a regular season game? You're listening to Locked On Heat. The NFL season begins next week, which means Crossover Wednesday will be back for the entire regular NFL season. You're going to get a special episode every Wednesday as the hosts from the opposing sides meet up to preview the excitement of the games happening that week. Find your favorite team wherever you get podcasts. Let's get to some news items here. David, Bam is hitting step-back threes in pickup games. We've seen the video making the rounds on social media. Is it time for him to unleash this in the regular season, do you think?
Yes and no. I know that's kind of a vague caveat, but, you know, it's a terrible shot. It was one where he was closely guarded and he hit the shot, but I could
totally He's leaning see. Backwards. He's completely off balance.
Yeah, I mean, I could see Bam making that once out of every 20 opportunities. As talented as he is, I don't think that's a steady part of his repertoire. He is not James Harden.
Can I just say that all the comments underneath that saying, Spo, let Bam shoot? Oh, are we kidding with this stuff? Are this we still
is,
doing
this?
Yeah, I thought this left when Whiteside went to Portland. Are we still doing this, people? Are we really think that Bam doesn't have the green light to shoot anything? We think that Spo is telling Bam, don't shoot? That's crazy. That is crazy to me.
I absolutely do. Maybe I shouldn't dive into this too much, but as you and I have talked about, you know, we always thought that the biggest issue with Bam is confidence. He just doesn't really have it, that it's probably impacted even his stint with USA Basketball. And, you know, recently I had that opportunity to talk to Chris Bosh, and in our interview, he mentioned that was the biggest factor for Bam, that he has all the talent in the world, but that his aggressiveness and confidence just aren't there yet, and that we're kind of waiting to see whether or not he's able to manifest that this season. I don't know if I necessarily have high hopes as much as I'd like to. We talked about this with Rowan Dudkarny last week. You know, the confidence issue is a big one for Bam. It's not Spoelstra keeping him on a tight rein or anything like that.
Yeah, it is the biggest obstacle in Bam's way. But if Spo looks at this video and tells him that that's great, I'm glad that worked out for you, don't do that in a game. That I understand. No contested step-back threes in a game. I get that. That's what pickup games are for. But I don't think anybody, Bam Adebayo included, is not saying that he's not able to shoot them. That was an Hassan Whiteside thing. Let's not do this. And by the way, if your center is not shooting threes, it's not the worst thing in the world. Only a few of them can do it. If he's hitting 2 out of every 10, that's not good enough. Right? And let's focus with Bam. Let's focus on that mid-range game. Let's focus on him just getting aggressive on the pick and roll, getting up there, creating vertical space, and just finishing at the rim. He's so good at it. Just do it more. That's all we need from him. And you know what? He's going to play twice as much next season. I bet we see more of it. But I do want to temper expectations just like you. That's all.
Yeah.
I think the athleticism is through the roof. The potential is through the roof, no doubt. But let's not expect Karl Anthony Towns next year.
Yeah, I'm hoping for a little bit more pick-and-pop type action from him. And if he's able to incorporate that and feel comfortable and hit a good number, at least, what's a good barometer for that?
50%? 3 out of 10.
Yeah, well, 3 out of 10 of pick-and-pop situations? I don't know if that's good
from
enough.
From 3?
To be honest with you. Oh, I'm talking mid-range.
Short pick-and-pop. Yeah. If you can hit 45%, that's perfect.
Yeah, that's what I'm thinking. Yeah. And that we haven't seen that. Like, very, very sparingly. I can't think of maybe a handful of attempts where he's actually felt comfortable unloading a jumper.
Well, if he's training with Chris Bosh, he was the master of the short pick and pop with a 45% mid-range clip. He was, so maybe he can rub off a little bit from that, but that would be best case scenario. I think you're right.
Yeah.
I think you're right. Barry Jackson of the Miami Herald reported last week and for a while now that the Heat remained focused on adding Bradley Beal before or during the 2021 offseason. Here's my issue with this, David. That's great. I think they need something before that, and I don't know that trading for Bradley Beal is feasible. Now, I won't rule anything out, but I don't know that trading for Bradley Beal is feasible, especially given how many assets you're going to have to part with in order to get Beal. I don't know that you could build a real team around that. I think that the real move, that the patient move and that the smart move and ultimately the more beneficial move would be to sign Bradley Beal as a free agent during 2021, but between now, between the sign and trade of getting Jimmy Butler and signing Bradley Beal potentially in the year 2021, something else needs to happen before that, right? And I think you get that third guy. I think you go get that third guy if your first two guys are going to be Butler and Beal. Who is that third guy? Go get that guy now, right?
Oh yeah,
it had to be for less than Beal.
Yeah, and that's tough because then, you know, they're not going to necessarily be the kind of superstar level player that's going to push Miami into contention. He's just going to be a complimentary player.
Someone that makes them marginally better, and then Beal walks in, and now you've got a contender.
I think the hope more than that, though, would be probably for internal development, right? That either Justice or Bam take that leap.
Or Tyler Hero, yeah.
Or Tyler Hero, yeah, but that seems unlikely. It would. I think that's probably the preferred move, that while you have somebody already under contract for a relatively valuable, cheap deal, that you would want them to be able to make that leap so that you can say, you know what, stay patient. And I think that's a big factor. And I think that's a concern, too, because while Jimmy agreed to, you know, a patient approach, that he knew that Miami would be as active and involved as possible, and clearly that was the case over the summer when they went after both Russell Westbrook and Chris Paul, that they're still, that they're asking Jimmy to say, sorry, we're taking 4 years out of your prime, and we're going to ask you to kind of just be as patient for half of that stint as possible while we wait to acquire Bradley Beal in 2021. So that's a gamble, and I wonder if Jimmy's on board with that, or whether or not he'll lose patience in a couple of years and say, look, you've got me here. I haven't seen anything from Justice or Bam to warrant my choosing Miami. You haven't done anything to acquire a superstar, which isn't always as easy as it might seem. And it's a risk that they're taking.
Well, maybe the plan that they pitched to Jimmy was, let's see if one of these guys pops this year.
Oh, I'm sure
and
they
if not,
did.
Right, then, because we just saw them do this with Josh Richardson. We're not trading Josh for Jimmy. A year later, they traded Josh for Jimmy. We just saw this happen. And so maybe you look at Justice Winslow, you look at Bam Adebayo, you look at Tyler Hero, like, all right, let's see what we got here. What does Jimmy Butler plus these things look like? And then we'll have a better idea of what we need to do moving forward. I still don't think that the Heat should or will trade more than one of them in a deal to go get, because there's no other way to add to this roster if you do that. I think you need at least two of those young guys on this roster moving forward. But you could part with one of them. You could part with one of them and maybe future draft assets when they become available, as they become available every year. And you could trade contracts. And maybe you're able to move Goran Dragic, who I still think has value and he's still on this roster. You could do something like that, but maybe in the meantime, you wait on... Like, look at what Brooklyn is doing. It's not a perfect comparison, but they just signed Caris LeVert to a three-year extension. He's 25, 26 years old, and you basically have this young guy blooming next to Kyrie Irving and Kevin Durant. Maybe you can manufacture something like that, where you have Jimmy Butler in his prime, ex-superstar in his prime, and then one of these young guys sort of blooming as that third complimentary piece, or second complimentary piece, depending on who that other person is. But I'm looking at names that could become available sooner than Beal and be acquired for a lot less than Beal. I'm looking at, obviously, Kevin Love is the one I keep bringing up. Could you imagine a core of Jimmy Butler, Kevin Love, and Bradley Beal? I mean, that is a really good trio there that complements each other well. Now, I don't know that that's winning a championship. I don't know that it's going to win a title, but it'll definitely it'll be one of the top three or four seeds in the East, which I think is pretty good.
Yeah, it's dicey. It's not an easy path for Miami or for Jimmy to remain that patient. And I wonder if he is on board with that plan. The specifics obviously have never been made public, nor will they. But I wonder, as I think about it now, as we're recording this, like, that pool of players, there aren't a lot that we foresee becoming available over the next couple of years. I wonder if they still feel that the move for Chris Paul is still enough to kind of push this team a little bit further into contention.
Finally, over the weekend, a minivan drove onto the top of a Toyota Corolla outside a Total Wine in Kendall, and authorities aren't sure how it happened. David, do you have any theories?
Well, I think the news story from the Herald, and specifically the police officer in charge of the investigation, theorized that maybe the person was backing up out of a parking space and then instead hit the car into drive and accelerated, rolling over the Corolla in the process. I mean,
how long do you need to realize that you're not going backwards? Is it at what point do you realize that you have gone forward on top of the car? Is it when you are fully on top of the other vehicle?
Yeah, I mean, I wonder if you're just quickly trying to pull out of there because, you know, traffic in town and country can be a little dicey.
Sure.
Maybe you're thinking, well, let me hurry up and get into the lane of traffic. And then by the time you realize that you're accelerating and forward, you're already there and it's too late. And maybe you get nervous, you don't move your foot off the pedal quickly enough. I don't know. I can't. I've never rode my car over another vehicle, so it's kind of tough
to
imagine. Yeah, I've never been in that. Look, I've done a lot of things driving, but never that. So, yeah.
What does that mean? Let's take a break. Coming up next, we're going to talk about flossing in public. You're listening to Locked On Heat. With the NFL season around the corner, you're not going to want to miss the new look Locked On NFL podcast. With expert analysis from former NFL scout Matt Williamson and host Brian Peacock, Locked On NFL is your daily podcast on all things NFL. Subscribe to Locked On NFL wherever you get podcasts. Remember to listen to and subscribe to new and archived episodes of Locked On Heat on Himalaya, as well as on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and Google Podcasts. If you're on iTunes, rate us, review us, say nice things about us. We're going to do this new thing, David. We'll try it once. We'll see if it sticks. It's called Cultured Radio. #culture. basically, we're going to spend the final segment of our Monday shows here just talking about something not basketball related. Maybe it is basketball related. I don't know. It's going to be something to do with culture in general. It's very broad, and it's broad on purpose. And I had a poll this morning, and I want to explain the poll. The poll was, is flossing in public okay or never okay? And the reason I brought this up is because I was getting a coffee this morning, and there was I was sitting down, and I opened up my laptop to go through some email and stuff like that, and there was this guy next to me, and you hear this plucking sound, and I look over, and you know about my sound sensitivity, David. I look over, and he is flossing there in the middle of this coffee shop. Now, that irritated me for obvious reasons, so I put out the poll. Is flossing in public okay? 21% of you said it's fine. 21% of people say flossing in public is okay. 79% say it's most certainly not okay. That 79% is right, and I don't know who this 21% is, David.
Well, you did get a response from a dentist who said it's important to floss anywhere, and so they can never say no to flossing, whether it's in public or not. So.
And I defend the struggle of the dentist. I get it. Here's the wrinkle. That the guy at the cafe was a nurse, okay? He was in that sphere. He was in the medical world. And
how do you know he was a nurse?
Because he was dressed like a nurse with all the garb, and these guys, he had the
they're
books
in scrubs. So it's somebody in the medical profession. It could have been anybody. My wife wears scrubs, and she's a speech language pathologist. I have to point that out to her.
Does she have a medical degree of any kind?
No, other than a master's, no.
Okay, well, he was either studying. I think he was studying to be a nurse. He was in scrubs. He had the textbook out and everything. He was taking notes, and in between taking notes, he decided he needed to floss at like 8 a.m. So what's your opinion on this? I mean, this is insane. I mean, this is just, what's the difference between this and picking your nose in public?
Oh, that's a tricky one. I think there's more, and for good reason, I think there's more of a negative connotation to picking your nose. It's something that children do, and it's kind of gross even when kids do it.
It's the same thing. I mean, what if there is like 3-day-old chicken in your floss and it just flies across the table? That's disgusting.
What about toothpicks? Are you okay with toothpicks in public?
Toothpicks are limited.
Ah, you see? Here's the rub. Like this feels like that episode of, you know, Jerry Seinfeld, the scratch versus the pick. You can scratch your nose right on the outside, even on the outer rim there.
Outer rim is fine.
Absolutely. A pick is a pick. A toothpick, however, seems like it's okay, and it's for most of society.
The toothpick is the equivalent of the scratch, because you're really not getting in anywhere with a toothpick. The toothpick actually might be the most useless object that we still deal with. I have never gotten any type of relief from a toothpick. So the toothpick is the equivalent of the outside nose scratch. The flossing in public, that's picking your nose in public.
I think it's a little extreme, and I can't see why said medical professional couldn't have just gone to the restroom to use the floss. Like, my only theory on this, much like why that person drove over a Toyota Corolla, is that maybe if they're studying and maybe they're working and maybe that's why they're wearing scrubs, they might be on call, they might have very, very limited time, who knows? Maybe, you know, you said they were sitting there at a coffee shop reading a textbook. That kind of indicates that they had more than enough time, but maybe not. I don't know. Maybe they're just like, well, this is just something you got to do. I got to floss.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know how much time you need to think about flossing.
They couldn't have just left their book there. Maybe they felt a little insecure about just leaving their stuff there. It could have gone stolen, I guess.
People ask, hey, can you watch my textbook? First of all, who in the right mind is going to steal a nursing textbook? Like, I'm never going to read that. Just go
to the... You can sell it back online,
maybe,
right?
Floss... Floss before you get there, man. Like, he brought floss. I've never even brought floss to a coffee shop. If you bring floss, you are prepared to floss. Like, you don't just have floss with you all the time. That's not like your wallet. That doesn't just come everywhere. Well, that's the kind of highbrow radio you can get in the third segment of Mondays. I don't know if this worked. I don't know if we've already been turned off by all of our listeners, David. But that was Cultured Radio. Tweet at us. Give us your feedback. And let us know. I mean, the poll is still open for another few hours. So are you okay with it? Are you not okay with it? Let us know. That's it for today. You can connect with us on Twitter using the hashtag AskElohit or email us at LockedOnHeat@gmail.com. Thanks for listening. Thanks for joining me, David.
You got it, Wes.